Urdu out here.
It's got roots in Urdu, yeah. But I don't understand Urdu.
Good morning.
It's part of it.
Sir Africans, I think we can start now. Welcome to the stars in the media who are here, who starts really to inform the public about the activities of participating here. I want to thank the media for that. It has been very well up until now. Thank you very much. Coming from yours truly. I know we have been making notes after having listened to Advocate Bikoli and Reverend Chikane and the minister. As a committee, I'm aware we don't have a view now. It's only from today we are going to deliberate on all what was told to us by both instances. Now, as members, we are going now to really see if we are, as this other committee, agree with the recommendation of the president or no. As parliament, it is our right to say yes or no. The public and everybody out there had hope and believe that as parliament, we are going to play our role as oversight practitioners without fear or favor or prejudice. And as co-chairs, that's what we'll be expecting from each and every member. What we're going to appeal is for us really to play the ball and not the man. That's our humble appeal to you politicians. But at times we attempted, to play the man, not the ball. But we're not going to start full debate here. We're going to allow members to deliberate freely and in order to assist us that when finally we take a decision, it's based on the reasons and input made by all of you. On that note, maybe before I open the floor for discussion, I can see that the airport is itching, can't wait, it's charged. You want to come in immediately. But let me check with my coach. Is there something you want to say before I open for discussion? Coach, is there anything you want to say before we open?
Well, maybe just to re-echo what the co-chairperson said. We listened attentively. We had an opportunity listening to Advocate Bikoli and listening to the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Affairs and the DG in the presidency. So I'm sure that today is the day for making those considerations because as members we do have a responsibility to make sure that we defend the constitution of the country, to defend the law, to make sure that what we enacted as parliamentarians is actually taken through in our discussions and deliberations. I'm sure that the debate will be far more robust. We had an opportunity of questioning the presenter, and now we've got an opportunity of raising our views. So I am just saying that the honor is with the members in terms of expressing themselves. So I'm sure that this will be the spirit in which this deliberation will ensue. Thank you, Chair, Co-Chair.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. Before we start this meeting, I had some nice discussion with the Honorable Member Delil. She promised me that they should be very nice to us. On that note, they can open the floor for discussions now. Dr. Delphos, they will start. Over to you.
Chair, I am itching to say something because I had a very upsetting dream last night. dreamt that we had four long days of discussion, argument here, and in the end, the ANC voted to support the president, and the opposition voted against him. The opposition voted for reinstatement of Advocate Macaulay, and the ANC voted for his removal. And after that, after many days of deliberation, so I am upset. Sarah, I had the same dream. Chair, I for one hesitate to say that I'm going, because I will need at least 2 hours if I really debate this and analyze the evidence before it, and voila, analyze the evidence that we heard here from the minister, Shikane, Pikoli. So I think in the end, we must wait, ask, invite the ANC to prepare a written report. And I have consulted with the other opposition members. We are going to prepare a joint report, hopefully, I think we are going to, and that we then debate the arguments as set out in the two reports. Because really, to now debate about the credibility of Pikoli or Shikane and all the niceties of a legal argument and the evaluation of the evidence, in the end, we've got to make a written report to Parliament. That's where it's going to end. And without a draft, we're going to argue in circles. And let me say right at the outset, if my dream, which I hope is not going to come true, but if it's true, and now that my colleague here has also had the same dream, it's almost as if there may be truth in that dream. But No. He's not at all. I don't think he's a pretty man. I will only sleep next to someone that I find very attractive. I haven't seen him in his pajamas yet, but I doubt that that would be enticing. So what it will probably end in, if the dream comes true, that there will be a report by the committee and a minority report. So that is my feeling. So if I do not actively, if you rule that we are going to debate, I will probably for one sit back and wait for something concrete before me, before we enter.
Yeah, maybe on that one, before I allow Honorable Father Mer and Honorable Nyambi to come in, we are having our researchers here and our staff say we are a better place to draft the report. It's only after we have looked at the report where we can propose some amendments or whatever, improvements on the report. But to, from the onset, the job to say, no, let's now draft two reports, I don't think it will be all. I think now let's contribute so that as a committee, at the end, the final product of the deliberation, that's what we want to report to Parliament. But to simply come with the report now, I don't think we're going to, because up until now, I haven't had the view of the ANC. I haven't had the view of the in this matter. It's only today maybe I want to say whether they are supporting the president or not. Up until when it started, I haven't had their view. But I know the DA and IFP, they were vocal about their position. But I want to humbly, as I said in the beginning, can we just contribute as parties? What is our take to the president's recommendation, please? I think that will take us somewhere, other than starting with this hard and fast rule before we even start. If I can humbly request the colleague, Dr. Delpo. I get you, I understand. Why you feel like that, but I think let's please As a plea from yours truly, as a traditional leader, I'll request humbly that assist me and my co-chair that we come up with a product that South Africans will be proud of, either for or against, but at least that will be this contribution by all parties in Parliament. That's with my humble appeal to you, colleagues. Thank you very much, Jen. Can I now recognize the Honourable Van der Merwe?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. When we kick off this discussion, I want to make my position clear, and that is that I, with respect, accuse the ANC of having taken a decision before this committee was formed, namely that Mr. Piccoli is not fit and proper and he must be dismissed. I therefore say that this committee is just playing along. It's window dressing. The decisions have already been taken. To a large degree, therefore, we are all wasting our time, because whatever the opposition have to say, today or tomorrow or whenever, the decision has already been taken. In fact, in this morning's Cape Times, Mr. Piccoli's successor is already appointed. They say, and I quote, legal and political sources said Mkhize, he's an advocate from Durban, Mkhize's appointment will be announced next month and he's already putting his team together. That corroborates my viewpoint that the decision was taken. We are playing along. I don't want to use too strong words, but we are playing along as fools because the decision has been taken. Now, this person who is to take over, according to the newspaper, has been his integrity has been questioned. He's been found guilty of blatant bias in handling an internal disciplinary hearing. He was fined 10,000 rands.
On the point of order, Chair.
Chair,
I'm not sure what is Parliament for us to come here and discuss media leaks and media rumors. Because the Honourable Van der Merwe is relying on what he has read in the newspaper. The ANC hasn't made any decision. They have not communicated any decision anywhere about the next target of the prosecution. So, I mean, if we are told tomorrow that Van der Merwe stole the car or Van der Merwe is involved in the rape, are you going to come and discuss that?
The Honourable Van der Merwe, can we now discuss the matter before us, please?
Listen, I'm exactly doing that, and I think that was not a point of order, because I'm quoting from a newspaper report today. I did not say the ANC has taken this decision. I'm saying what is in the newspaper. And what I'm saying about the newspaper is that they allege that the ANC has already appointed the successor to Mr. Piccoli, which adds to my argument, namely that we're just playing along in a comedy.
On a point of order, he believes in that particular rumor. He has said that here we are just playing along. The ANC has made its decision. And he believes in that, and he wants to bring that as evidence.
The person is correct. I believe in that. And I'm bringing it as evidence to substantiate my point. I believe that the ANC has in fact taken a decision outside.
Can I rule out of order, please, sir? The ANC will talk for themselves, whether they are for or against. Can you please participate as a member and wonder for the ANC, please?
Yes, but Chairperson, the ANC and the President and ANC member has taken a decision, and this is exactly what I'm discussing. I am saying that the decision was taken, there's proof that the decision was taken, and the best proof will be when we vote in the House, when all the ANC members, I predict this, will
vote. Point of order, Chair. You have made a ruling, Chair.
Okay.
You have made a ruling. We must abide by that ruling. And as far as I know, in the ANC, we do not have a member called Goes for the Merwe. He must not talk on behalf of the ANC. We're not a member of the ANC. We're going to talk on our own behalf.
Honourable Van der Merwe, can I appeal once more? Can you, if you don't have any other thing to say, you can wait for now, then you come back later. Can I call other members? But if you want to continue.
Chair, I just want to say that by ending, that when we vote, whenever we're debating it in the House, and when we vote, I predict the prophet Koos van der Merwe predicts that all the ANC members are going to vote for the to approve and the opposition against, because the ANC has already taken the decision and are using us as a bunch of fools to play along with them.
I went for a very same trap of that dream by Dr. Telford. And that dream, I think, is misleading. But please, mind your language, we are taken as fools. I don't think it's really. That's what Rahul said at the Nessal. Let me allow my co-chair to come in as well.
Yes, I thought Dr. Telford raised a suggestion about the report, and the co-chairperson was responding on that. Obviously, every member in this house or in this committee is entitled to his or a view. So if the public is agitated that anything which happens in parliament is just a disguise, if that is perpetrated by members of parliament who are members of honor, who participate in elections to make sure that they either become the majority party or the minority party, then for me it's problematic, because obviously there is a constitution, and the constitution talks about a proportional representative system. And obviously you go to any parliamentary committee, you have that set up. So when we fight, you win the battle in an election. So what members should say is that if they occupy the same view as Honorable Van der Merwe, it means from the onset it was useless to constitute this committee. It was useless. And but in terms of the constitution, it was through the multi-party agreement in a multi-party forum where the constitution was drawn and derived. So the wisdom of the constitution cannot be thrown out of the window all of a sudden, precisely because members of opposition shield the power of the African National Congress. Whatever the opposition wants to do is to stick to their guns to say this is our position and that's it. That is not going to change you from becoming rubber stamps, because the ANC is accused of being rubber stamps, and the ANC is avoiding that as much as possible. But the nature of democracy, the nature of the constitution warrants that as soon as the president has pronounced on a decision, that pronouncement in terms of the act, it has to be taken back to parliament, and this type of a forum has to be formed. So we cannot sit here and tell the public out there that traveling from wherever we come from, we are just traveling because we are a joke. So I hope we are not going to live with those theories, because those theories for me are dangerous. So the best thing to do is to say a report has to be drawn. The parliamentary staff has to be given an opportunity to write a report. Because this has been a tradition. It has been happening in the past 15 years. It has been happening. So when you predict or you dream about a defeat, then you want to throw the towel. Tell us that you are throwing the towel. So as we should know that IFP has been defeated in a fair parliamentary vote. So if opposition wants to keep that position, it should stay there. But then we know that in an open debate, opposition had to throw the town because of the power and the might of the African National Congress. So what we are trying to do here, we are saying let us go on and deliberate up until maybe in your deliberation you can expose the flaws. And the journalists are here, the press is here. Every time we talk, the public does say, no, you are just there to rubber stamp. But we don't believe that rubber stamping is democracy at play. simply saying that let us give ourselves an opportunity of using this platform to do what our constituency has set us to do. And if we don't do that, then we can go back to our constituency and say, we're no longer members of parliament. Because to be a member of parliament, for starters, will be swallowed by the African National Congress. And the inevitably, you are saying there should be a one party state. And you are saying the ANC should rule this country without opposition. So we don't want that route. So you use, it's better that you use the opportunity you have as a parliamentary forum, or you don't. And from there, up until the constitution gets changed, then we can have a different approach. As of now, can we proceed as members of parliament, members of honor, credibility, and integrity, to make sure that we debate issues without any fear or favor? This is my take on this issue. I think we should proceed.
Thank you very much. I think you have assisted us a great deal. But voters, please note that the IFP is throwing in the towel. No. Oh, that was the next thing on the line was Honorable Nyambi.
Can I just say there are times that I don't want to throw the towel, but the punch.
Honorable Nyambi.
No, Chairperson, I'm fine for now after the elaboration by your coach.
Honorable Kale.
Yes, just to add to what people are saying, one is I think it's not a question ultimately of whether we decide here to reinstate Advocate Pekoli or endorse the president's decision to remove him. There are a whole lot of implications also for legislation and so on. And that is why we need some discussion, because one of the things it seems to me at least, and we must have a discussion about it, is that the legal framework within which these decisions are made about NDPP, it's not certain, it's not clear. And as Parliament, we might want to consider, let's say within the first 24 months of the new five-year term, that the Executive and Parliament, the Justice Committees presumably, apply their mind to make it clear. Because what does the Constitution mean when it says final responsibility? To what extent was the Minister acting within her legal mandate or not? So, I mean, even if we defer on the decision about Advocate Pekoli, there are many, many things that will bind us, many, many things that we have in common to avoid these uncertainties. And when people drafted the Constitution, they could not have anticipated what happened. In fact, when the NP Act was drafted, it couldn't have been anticipated. So I really think it's not just about Advocate Pekoli. Our report should deal with the need for a review, possibly, of the legislation. Now, whether that new committee and the new minister and so on decide that after review that there's no need for amendments, so that's not for us to say, but in our report we can couch that. The second thing is we have to do here what we've done in every report. I know the committees that I've been in, we've reflected the views of the different parties. Let's take the Scorpions film. We repeated verbatim what each party said in our report. They'll confirm that where they presented their arguments, so that an incoming committee looking at this new DPC, I might decide that some of the things that were not accepted by the majority when we processed Scorpion Spoke, 2-3 years down the road, might have value. Similarly here, I think Dr. Delport and all the opposition parties represent, we have another role, not just to dream, as she says, but also to actually say that even if they can't get their way on this issue, there are things that they would like us put into the report that the incoming committee needs to look at. The final thing is what we're doing here, we must remember, is not about Advocate Pekoli ultimately. It's about shaping an approach to issues like this, not just on NDPP. There are issues and implications here for judges and so on and how they must be processed. And I really think that what we do in our report must actually shape, if you like, a particular approach for the new generation of MPs. So there's more than enough we can discuss around legislation, legal framework, and so on. But I would like to insert into this discussion that one of the issues we need to consider is how useful is the legal framework, and how much ultimately, it doesn't matter what the president did or Advocate Piccoli did or what the minister did, but that the legal framework for them to play their respective roles is not clear. And that ultimately is our responsibility. As much as Dr. Delfort, Van der Merwe, and Patricia de Roo, we shaped this constitution. Why did we allow a term like final responsibility resides with the minister? What does that mean? In a constitution, you can't spell it out. But in the NP Act, Dr. Delfort must have been in that committee at the time. At least I can say I wasn't. But he's co-responsible too, like I am, because I voted for the NP Act in the House, for where we are at the moment. So I really think we must discuss the matter of Advocate Piccoli, but not lose sight of the many other issues that might find us.
Thank you very much, Dr. Van Heerden.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I was away last week for on other matters, and I think to the interest of other members as well. And so I said now an opinion, that's an opinion, and not without having the benefit of attending last week's meeting. Chairperson, as far as I'm concerned, I hear what Karim is saying here. I remember I was part of Chapter 8, drafting Chapter 8. And I remember that well-intended remarks by the opposition, of which I was part of, was absolutely discarded by the majority at that stage. But be that as it may, Chairperson, be that as it may, I think one should never underestimate the well-intended suggestions, proposals made by some members of the opposition, in the first place. In the second place, Chairperson, there is unfortunately...
Is it possible to pull your mic?
Thank you. Yes. Chairperson, there is unfortunately certain perceptions, and one must never underestimate the power of perception. Perceptions in the economy, perceptions in politics, perceptions in law. You can never underestimate the power of perception. And one should take consideration of perceptions. And at this stage, at this point in time, Chairperson, unfortunately, my observation, and I maybe have the benefit of judging from not being part of that committee, although I'm a member of that committee, by judging from and you can never underestimate again, news reports, be that in the written and the electronic media, about what is taking place. And the perception, unfortunately, is some sort of bias against Mr. Piccoli, rightfully or wrongfully, doesn't matter. And I think that one should bear that in mind when we debate the issue, and also bear in mind in the second place the well-intended intentions of members of the opposition. I will consider my position regarding the input. I'm not going to, maybe I will play along in the comedy, if we can call it that way. But I will, I don't mean that in any degrading way, Chairperson. But Chairperson, well, again, the perception, Mr. Karim, again, the perception, the comedy. I will play along and I will stay, Chairperson, and I will not take part further in this discussion until finally. This is in my until the final report, and as far as I'm concerned, I cannot be part. My party cannot be part of the situation so far. But I will stop at this stage. And yes, thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Dr. Van Heerden. Now we need your input here. Health co-chair, you remain part of the collective that must assist in coming up with a good report. Honorable Delil, then followed by Honorable
Chairperson, I'm listening to the debate, and I'm trying to find what we hope to achieve, or are we merely putting forward the wider context of this debate? But I think what we all have to accept that there's only one constitution in South Africa. And there's broad consensus on that constitution. We all accept the constitution. We all accept that the constitution is the supreme law of the land. the exercise that we are dealing with now comes down to a very key principle of that constitution, and that is the separation of powers. That, to me, is a concern. And I think maybe some of the comments made by other opposition parties, yes, is based on history and experience, what has happened in the past. Where we've seen this important principle where Parliament and the executive came together along party political lines, and that important principle then gets violated. To me, that's the crux of the matter. There's also the interpretation of what I understand the separation of powers and what other people understand about separation of powers. But then we are fortunate that we've got an independent judiciary that will deal with that dispute, and it will remedy, you know, how far we can go with Parliament, how far the executive can go. Now, the whole issue about the comment said about the final responsibility. Again, the interpretation for me there is that the final responsibility rests with the minister in terms of policy and the administration of justice. But a minister cannot interfere with the independence of the NPA. That is a universal accepted standard. And this is where some of these things are beginning to get blurred. And really, I would also plead that we debate this a bit about, because, and then also I want to say to the ANC that when we differ with you, it's on the basis of principle, not on the basis of and your understanding of the same principle that I'm putting forward. That's where we will differ and must differ, and that's why we are here to debate. But I can also see that we've said a lot, we set aside a number of days to continue deliberating. Now, if we start the deliberations today and it do become clear that we are not going to find each other, yes, Parliament will put a report together, and so each of the opposition parties will come with their views. So I'm really pleading that we speed up the process and not prolong it once the chairperson make an assessment to see that it's clear that we're not going to come with one decision in the end. You're going to have a divided committee. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honourable Jalil. We have noted those committee proposals. Honourable Sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, just at the outset, I must just wish to express our concerns as well from the ACDP side as to the perception that the decision has already been taken. Again, it's a perception, and we will soon find out during deliberation. Maybe the reason at this stage why we have that perception is the robustness of the questioning by Advocate Piccoli, of Advocate Piccoli, that led to him questioning the objectivity of the ANC members, where he made a comment expressing concerns that there was a subjective element in the questioning. And secondly, if I might presume that the decision has been taken, that the minister is not going to be called. We are now in deliberation. Now, the Minister of Justice at that time is obviously pivotal, because the reason it was given was the breakdown in relations. And she never gave evidence, oral evidence. We would have liked the opportunity to have engaged with her further. Clearly, she never gave oral evidence because the advocates perceived that she wouldn't be able to stand under cross-examination. That would have been helpful. So this regrettably enforces the perception that the decision has been taken already. However, we believe that one should participate in the process as we always have. We also believe that what Mr. Karim said is very valid. We disagree with him in one regard, and that is that the central issue is Advocate Piccoli's future. There are additional side issues which are also of importance, and I think that deliberations will assist us. But the central issue is the future of Advocate Piccoli. That is what we're all about. The issues that are obviously very important and which I think can assist us in deliberations is the issue that I've raised continually, my concerns about the independence of the NPA. What do we understand by that in terms of the Constitution? What is a fit and proper person? What is final responsibility? I think it's very important to bear in mind that this is a unique process. We've never embarked on this process before.
again, while the commission has stated that there's no guidelines, and there might well be a need to buttress and to tighten up the legislation so that we in the future know how we approach it. But we need to just, as a last point, to be very aware of the fact that the decision, should our perception be correct and should the President's decision be ratified by Parliament, it will clearly end up in court. And all of us, the decisions and the deliberations, could well become part of that court process. So I would urge all of us to be very mindful of that fact, that this matter could, if our perception is correct, end up in the High Court. And so let's just bear that in mind. But with those comments, Chairperson, thank you for that.
Thanks, Professor. You know, that dream by Dr. Delport is messing up my meeting. that dream is messing us up. But thanks, Steve. You are right on it, because what you expect as co-chairs is members to say, based on what we heard, based on the following reasons, we feel the President was correct, or feel the people were right. But up until now, we're getting few of that. That's what I want to hear. So that would make us to decide as to whether can we continue the deliberation or adjourn the deliberation. So based on what we had, our view is that this and this must happen. I think we've heard of perceptions and dreams. Let's go to the core of the issue now. Now, I was about to call up Honorable Makwanisha, but the first I want to come in and say something.
To ask a question. A question to opposition that the ANC has a position. What about opposition? The opposition has already taken a position against what the state president has decided upon. And they presumably say that the ANC agrees with the decision of the state president. So, in your dreams and perceptions, you must dream about yourself. I think Dr. Delport did say that when he was in that dream, we had voted pro the decision of the president and the opposition anti. So it's fair not to point fingers at the ANC because the majority party, the ANC can equally do so. And this session is not about that, of pointing fingers to each other. But we have to check if there is an adherence to the tenets of the Constitution, to the tenets of the NPA Act, to whether when we constituted the Act, we did not, because we didn't anticipate. There were certain things which we overlooked. So maybe these are the issues we should discuss. So I just want to say that in as much as I asked a question, but the way I asked the question, I've answered myself. Is it not fair to say that opposition, and for the first time in the history of opposition, I see opposition so united. In many instances and occasions, there will be variation of argument. But today, what of that? I say it's there. So that you can clarify yourself, but because the proposal which was made, that you want to write one report, it created that impression that there is unity in opposing the decision of the president. So I'm saying we cannot be here and be pointing fingers at each other, whereas we are not willing to start with the business of the day. I think we should start with the business of the day, proceed, because there is all the issues around the executive. I'm sure that Honorable Karim raised them, and equally Honorable Patricia raised the issues. So we should say this is a point of focus, whether we agree or disagree, but these are the points of focus, like that we should have an agreement on how we interpret that role of the minister and interpret the role of the director of prosecution, and also come out with the thinking on what you understand on his independence. because in both presentations, which were clear that the director of prosecution felt undermined, you see, in the process by the minister. So we should discuss those things. We shouldn't shy away from them. So that is why we are here. So, of course, I think we can maybe get into the business of the day without deliberating furthermore on dreams and perceptions.
Okay, continue.
Yes,
I'll
again.
So,
that's another
Chair? Another point of order. Can Dr. Teleport explain what does he mean when he says that we'll be able to deal with you?
Yes, I can. Then the good relationship between opposition and the ANC, and I started this off by talking lightly about a dream. I could have come in here and said, you people have already made up your mind, forget about it. And my approach could have been very, very hard if I wanted to. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to create an atmosphere where we could talk and even laugh at one another. But if you continue, Chair, with your interruption of opposition members, the whole atmosphere will be soured.
Our thorough leadership, Honorable Leroux will tell you, it will allow members to speak. And that is what we're going to do, even in this ad hoc committee. And can we allow Honorable Leroux to please to participate?
Thank you, Chair. So what I'm basically worried about is the fact that the ANC is acting completely out of line of how they usually act when there is a serious transgression of a member. And that supports my view that a decision has already been taken about advocates to call it. And whatever we discuss here is not going to change that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Delport.
Chair, I don't even want, maybe I should make my input at this stage. I never pointed fingers. I suggest, and I never said, let's not debate. I said, let us put it in writing, and then we know what we can debate and where there are points that we may agree upon. But let me address then the real issue. And I agree with the Honorable Karim that, we may make other recommendations as well. But our core business is to advise on what the President has decided, to advise Parliament. That is our core business. Other things are side issues which can be taken up, Justice Committee, anywhere, but we can make... Yes, of course. Also, make use of this opportunity to put certain other recommendations. Because it is quite correct that the legislation is not clear. For instance, there is nothing to indicate in the legislation whether, if there's not a prior suspension, and the President acts directly without temporary suspension, whether there must be an inquiry or not. It's not even clear whether any dismissal or removal from office, as you put, must be preceded by a suspension. And that creates enormous difficulties. And it creates also the problem that Janwala faced. And that was, what am I to adjudicate on? She adjudicated on the reasons given. And she felt there were no good reasons given by the government. The question is, was she then entitled even to listen to other evidence, not within the framework of the original reasons put forward, not even within the framework of her own terms of reference? So there's a large question mark hanging over the legality of the process that was followed. Is it, once there was a suspension, reasons given, terms of reference to the Janwala Committee, can inquiry rather, correct word, is, can the President now come with totally new reasons for a suspension? The point I make is that the legislation is not absolutely clear. And the only way to interpret that legislation is to go to the constitutional principles of our constitution and then try and get the
guiding star for the interpretation from those principles. This, now on the merits, let us accept for a moment that the old process was not inherently flawed, which I think it was, but let us accept that it was not inherently flawed. There are certain very distinct features of this whole saga. The first of it is the shifting of goalposts, the introduction of new reasons time and time again. That surely was not fair to Picot, because he was faced all the time with other reasons. Secondly, a multitude of absolute spurious complaints were leveled at him. And Dunwala found that no substance in this. She heavily criticized the DG Justice that even said there are 11 good reasons. Now, why wasn't the 11 good reasons then produced? They tried all sorts of funny reasons, even brought in reasons of so-called actions by Piccoli when he was not even yet in office. A multitude of spurious complaints is a facet. It's clear that that was part and parcel. Thirdly, the unacceptable testimony of the Director General Justice, which shows a clear bias, a clear ulterior motive, which we must take into account. A fourth clear result. The integrity of Piccoli is unscathed. It's even agreed and accepted by the president in his final decision. He mentions that the man's integrity and his competence is not an issue. But now the most telling characteristic of the old saga. What were the real reasons? What was the real reason? What were the real reasons? The Reverend Chikane gave a very clear picture. He says, and that is the crucial time, that final stage, he said, that led to the suspension. He said, it was all about state security. Give us time. We've got to put certain things in place before you go and arrest commissioner of police and execute the search and seizure warrant. He needed time to do that. That was what it was all about. Not the prosecution and the arrest itself, because that they knew for months. There were 10, 13 meetings and reports on that. They knew that was coming. That was not the issue. The issue was, give us time. We don't want to cause a situation that we cannot deal with. Now, how on earth must I believe that view? That was uppermost. Is the very letter thereafter drafted, as I put it to the Reverend, probably by him, to the minister, who had nothing to do with state security? It was, I want the information why the commissioner is going to be arrested. Who's going to believe that? How can you be so illogical? And then the minister says she was trying to stop the arrest. Specifically, read the letter. You must not continue with this before I get all the information. I want to see you shouldn't be stopped permanently. That's the undertone. I want to know. But even a step further, now the president suspends, and now he appoints the Dunwala inquiry. once again, what is in the terms of reference? Is that the core reason? To what extent did he try and execute a race without due cognizance, without taking into account state security? It's not there. Once again, it's not in the terms of reference. Then comes the evidence before the Janwala inquiry. Once again, it was not the court thing. It was about a relationship that broke down, a score of allegations. Then comes the evidence now, inter alia, from the reverend, in which he says that was paramount. That was the important issue. It's an afterthought, Jay. I cannot for one moment reject Piccoli's clear evidence before us, before the inquiry, that over a long time he informed. I can imagine what happened. He was frustrated, and that Janwala agrees. He was frustrated. He wanted to do his job. He wanted to get the evidence. The police frustrated him. Wouldn't surrender the necessary documentation. So that is why he obtained, and I applaud him for going ahead and getting these search warrants and getting the warrant for arrest. And once again, he does the reasonable and correct thing. He informs the executive members. He need to inform the president inter alia, saying, I have now my warrants of arrest issued by a judge. I'm arrest and seize, a search and seizure. I'm going ahead. I cannot delay any longer. What did he do wrong? What was his big wrongdoing? He was doing his job. And now we come and argue. He is, or the president argues, he's a wonderful, competent man. He's got integrity. And then you find, but oh no, he didn't take cognizance of state security. But say, what is this state security? It reminds me of an earlier regime where everything was regarded and acted against on the basis of state security. The security of the state has been threatened, it seems to be, in this country so many times. I thought we were past that, but it seems to me that there's a threat to state security even in the arrest of one man, where you do not need, where you need 14 days a week is not enough. Because that is the whole thing. And then also that he should have informed the minister before. But he had executive members against his actions against Sadebi. He couldn't get the support of the police. Go and get your, if you do your duty, Mr. Piccoli, get your warrants. And then inform them, I have it now. I'm going ahead because that is my duty. The president, with all due respect to the president, is removing a man from office because he did his duty. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Telford. I allowed you to speak for this long period because I didn't want to deal with it. Yeah, can I recognize the Honorable Nyambi?
Thank you, Chairperson. We have now passed the issue of perception, but I think it will be correct because once you say it was raised on the presentation by Advocate Piccoli, the issue of subjectivity, we have to agree that those presentations are the ones that are supposed to assist us today to be able to have proper context of the issue.
and the objectivity of the question assisted us to understand. To cite maybe one practical example, the issue around the manner in which they dealt with 7 days or 14 days. But when we had Reverend Chikane, he gave us information that clarified the confusion that he had the previous day. But I want to address the part that was raised now by Honorable Telford. We must not be tempted to discuss the suspension there, because once we are discussing the suspension and reading the term of reference selectively, leaving other parts, it might create problems for us. Let me quote from the report, or from the terms of reference. I quote, the fitness of Advocate Pikodi to hold the office of National Director, in particular, whether he, in exercising his discretion to prosecute offenders, has sufficient regard to the nature and extent of the threat posed by organized crime to the national security of the Republic, whether he, in taking decisions to grant immunity from prosecution to or enter into plea bargain arrangement with persons who are allegedly involved in illegal activities which constitute organized crime as contemplated in the Act, took due regard to the public interest and the national security interest of the Republic, as contemplated in Section 198 of the Constitution, as well as the prosecution policy. Whether he failed to appreciate the nature and extent of constitutional and legal oversight powers of the Minister of the Prosecuting Authority, and such matters as may relate to fitness and propriety of the National Director to hold office. I think once you read them and you just leave them and you go selectively and deal with the letter of suspension, it has a danger of leading to wrong conclusions, and the person who's just following might get confused. Of course, the letter of suspension is raising two issues, but you can't delink that to the term of reference that was dealt by the Chinwala Commission. The other point, Chairperson, that I think can assist us, from the presentation, if you're checking the issue of national security, even though there's a general agreement that there's no question about integrity of Advocate Pikodi, we're all listening, we all agree, and his understanding of technical issues, that is not a question. But if you get to these issues right from linking them to the term of reference of national security, you can see that from the findings, there are some problems. In the presentation, there's one part that was very interesting that I picked up that I think we have to discuss it. It was posed by two different members to Honorable Advocate Pikodi, the issue of the browse mode, how he responded to that, and the issue of him being given opportunity to do a representation after the finding. I think we have to discuss that there was lack of appreciation, specifically in relation to deficiencies from his part. When it was posed that as a human being, you might have weaknesses, but all of us, we were listening to him responding to that question. To me, he was able to accept the finding where he was supported. But where there were some weaknesses, it was impossible for him to acknowledge weaknesses in a manner that would indicate that once you can give him another chance, he can be able to improve. That is why I'm making a submission here that let's deal with that.
right from the presentation that he made, right from the presentation that was written by his legal team, the lack of appreciation of those issues. And the other part is to take the letter of suspension, trying to use it to make issues of national security as peripheral issues that are not important. I think that make us not to contextualize the issues as they are. I'm raising those two issues, Chairperson, that if we can get to the to the presentation, it was raised in the presentation. It was even posed to him in the form of a question that, let's say we are giving you an opportunity, where will you improve as a person? It's not for me now to say what was his response, because all of us were part of the presentation. But I can, my last point, question, is an appeal. The consistent impression being created that there's a position will make us not to do justice to the issues at hand. Let us agree that we have this challenge, we have had presentation, but we are engaging on these issues and there is no position. But based on what was gathered on the days when presentations were made and the information that we had at our disposal, let us engage on these issues in a much more positive approach without saying people have got a position. I think if we can have that spirit, we are going to be able at the end of the day, based on what we are going to raise today and discuss, to reach a particular understanding. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Nyambi. The following members participating will be followed by Honorable Karim Dawu Kompela and Honorable David. Then Honorable Deputy Chief. In that order.
Sorry, Chair, you repeat. Now, some of the issues I wanted to raise have been covered. But you see, I think one of the things why it's important we do engage, although we don't want to prolong it, is because it assists the researchers to draft a report. And in that regard, I think we must allow me to say a few things, because I would like the report to consider this. You see, one of the things is, it's not just the outcome, it's the process. We're setting a precedent here. We never had this before. And hopefully we'll never have this again. But you may find a situation where a judge is impeached, and then a committee has to be set up and so on. So in that regard, I think it's important that we should be clear about a few things. One is, I don't think it's fair to say that there was aggressive questioning of Advocate Piccoli and not of the representative executive. For what it's worth, you may think it's a charade, but for what it's worth, we sat with the two members of the executive till about 3:15. Secondly, for what it's worth, it's nothing to hide. The chair wanted to know why did we not raise those questions. But interestingly, you don't have to believe me. But, I mean, really, I can't force you to believe me. It's not helped by the fact that you hear all these things outside, and not least that article in the paper. But the truth is, most of the questions you asked, we were going to ask anyway. And someday, 6 months from now, Comrade Chair, may be a truncated version of the questions we had to be given to them. That will be the test. And they can look it up at forensic experts and see when the document was done. It was done the day before we met with members of the executive. So I really think when you're talking about perceptions, also we have to be fair. There's perceptions obviously on both sides. You've already taken a decision, in my view, before Advocate Piccoli or the executive appeared, that he should be reinstated. As much as you say we took the decision before even the hearing. So it applies both ways. Let's be fair about that. I also agree with Patricia. Neither side wants to prolong it. Both of us have got the same election to fight. You know, and some of us have got also bills that we have to process as chairs and so on, not these constitutional amendments. So I agree we shouldn't prolong it, but I also don't think we should just rush it through, because we are setting some precedents here. The most dangerous precedent, I think, would have been to say, let's hear both sides and let's prepare our respective reports. Because that would mean that the next time an issue like this emerges, no need to meet. All we do is invite the both parties that are adversarial, and then Parliament says, okay, we finished, write a separate report. So I'm very glad that the chairs have dissuaded Dr. Delport and others, and I think he will agree on reflection, hopefully, that that is not the way to go. And that we must perhaps get guidance from the chairs, that the researchers might want to adopt the role in respect of the report that we've done in local government committees, that we've done in public enterprise, where we do reflect outside, whatever the decision is.
So in this case, I think it's particularly necessary to do so because of the nature of our responsibilities and our legal mandate. So I'm saying the process we are adopting is precedent setting, and therefore I'm very pleased to see we are engaging. But that does mean a few things. One is that, you see, oversight also must be clear. I want to throw this in for the researchers to think about. Doesn't reside simply in the way you reach your outcome. In the outcome, it also resides in the way you critically engage with the executor. And in that regard, I do not believe, I could be wrong, that there's any member of the ANC that is arguing that the presentation by the government of its case in the Jinwala inquiry is particularly good and scintillating. No one, I think, on our side is saying that. No one. I didn't hear anybody say that. And the way we posed questions to Chikane and Surti, the minister and the DC, would surely have suggested that. So I would like to suggest, it is my view for now, but the caucus can think about it and so on. I don't think we're going to argue in our report that the government presented a wonderful, cohesive, illuminating, tight, rigorous argument. But then again, let's use the same criteria we use for developing democracies and perhaps even for established democracies. I'm not a lawyer, but I can assure this committee that I qualify to be one. I have watched 12 years of Law and Order on Tuesday nights. I mean, the original series, consistently. I haven't missed a single set of Law and Order for 12 years, and I look forward to the 13th series. Can I clarify? I don't mean Law and Order Criminal Intent or Law and Order Special Victims Unit. I'm talking of the original Law and Order. I've watched it, and let me also suggest a few things to you. One, you see, I was hoping, but maybe people are saying, yeah, Eunice is cleverly trying to distract us. I don't, with due respect to both you and Dr. Delaporte's team, I don't agree that the legal issues are a side issue. I think they're a fundamentally related issue. I think it's the framework within which we must apply our mind to Advocate Piccoli's matter without getting embroiled in abstract discussions that lawyers love having about the relationship and so on. Patricia and I are not lawyers, but I want to engage with her around the separation of powers and to what extent it's correcting. I was hoping we'd go the route first of just clarifying where we agree and disagree on what the law means, because that then determines whether, one, the minister was, how far she could have gone, the previous minister, in what she said in the letter. It also determines, to some extent, how far the president can go. I was hoping we would start with, we're not going to agree, but at least we can agree on what we agree on and what we disagree on the framework. For example, I'm not a lawyer, but Sister and others will help. You see, my understanding is not so clear, Patricia, that it's a complete separation of powers issue. In other words, as I understand it, the judges, again, I've been learning over the last 18 months, and as I said, unlike you, I watched 12 years of Law and Order, so the playing fields are not level, okay? Yeah. But can I suggest, you see, let's be realistic. As I understand it, right, the NDPP, if you like, and there's a professor there, is somewhere between a judge and the executive. In other words, the NDPP, the national prosecutor, acts for the state in a way, or the people, if you like, against accused people accused of crime. So you can't equate, am I not correct, a judge with a national director in the first instance. So when you're talking about separation of powers, it's a bit more, let's say, complicated and nuanced. Secondly, I think that we must also be clear. You see, in the law and order that I watch, the Attorney General is actually elected. And the decisions they make on the eve of a re-election, I've seen it in law and order, is partly influenced by whether they're going to get re-elected or not. I'm told in the United States, no less, judges are appointed by the president. And I know from what I read in the newspapers that actually when it came to the decision about whether Al Gore or George Bush would finally prevail with those few votes, the three judges appointed by a Republican president voted for Bush, and the two judges appointed by a Democratic president voted for Al Gore. So when we talk about separation of powers, you know, people are misinterpreting to some extent Bhutana Kompela. He should have spoken in Sesotho maybe. But he's right in a way.
I mean, I hear that in many established democracies, they appoint the attorney generals, and they choose people whom they think fall within, broadly speaking, the political parameters of the prime minister or president of that country. Now, in respect of state security, you see, I'm not compelled by the view that somehow the country was going to collapse if Advocate Piccoli had acted. But I do think a more nuanced notion of state security is relevant. You see, what I don't understand is, why is it wrong for a president of a country to tell the national director, who has to inform the minister and thereby the minister president, I'm going to arrest the national police commissioner? Why is it wrong for the president to say, if you arrest the police commissioner, in this case he's the head of Interpol, if you arrest him, at the moment you know there's been persistent conflict between the SAPS and the NPA, particularly the DSO. Why is it wrong, the opposition says, that the president says to the national director, I'm not interfering in your specific decision to prosecute or not. I'm simply saying, in the interest of security of the country, I need to negotiate one, call in the commissioner and tell him, look, you're going to be arrested. Now, have you got any ideas in mind who would deputize for you while you're in court? You can give me some names, etc., etc., and I'll apply myself, give me three names or whatever. Why is it wrong to do that? The issue that arises is we're not a commission of inquiry. We're not a court. We can't actually prove the facts on either side. What we've got to deal with is credibility. For me, there's nothing wrong with a president seeking to do that. The issue arises of whether the president went beyond that. And that is something we hear both arguments that impossible for us unless we demolish, can't even come to any conclusion. Moreover, let's be clear. It's very instructive how the opposition operates. You see, where Jinwala finds he's a person of integrity, they're very warm about it. But Jinwala, for what it's worth, also finds, on the basis of the evidence before her, there is no case to be made that the president interfered, the previous president, in a decision about taking action against the national commissioner. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. I wasn't there. You know, but what I do know is that it's credible to argue both sides. What I'm saying is there's nothing wrong with that. So when you're talking about state security, I don't mean the Civil War of the 80s, but there is a sense in which, you see, what the issue the report has to deal with is that there's two issues that arise. In what sense is national security of consideration in deciding whether a national director is fit and proper? But the related question, which I think is more significant for us, what does national security in the context of a national director of prosecutions means, as distinct from the head of NIA or SAS or the crime intelligence director? I don't think you're following what I'm saying completely here, because these things are just occurring to me now, and I'm not a lawyer, but the point I'm making is, you see, there is a sense in which I'm convinced, the more I listen, that there is a sense in which the national director must be sensitive, and the sense in which surely we agree is that the sense I've just said. The president calls him in, says, listen, you're going to do this, give me some time, I need to contact Interpol, I need to find a replacement, I need to calm him down, I need to ensure the conflict between the DSO and SAPS doesn't spill over. You will recall previously, when the DSO converged on President of the ANC's house, I was in Europe somewhere, but I was told, and there were even news bulletins there, that I don't know if it's exaggerated in Europe, but that some of those people were protecting the protectors of the deputy president of the ANC at the time, were actually prepared to fight. So, in that sense, I don't think one should necessarily accept the way it was presented by Chikane, but Parliament was not obliged to, was a fly on our mind. But I don't think I agree with Dr. Delport either. Somewhere between the two, I think, is something this committee report should actually seek to go. But it should also ask the incoming committee to apply its mind on these two issues. What sense national security is relevant, and what is the meaning of national security in the context of a national director? Very quickly, I know the other issues about the specific things, I'm not going to respond to Dr. Delport. I don't know. Nor do you. You're raising a lot of questions, but neither of us can tell. And I don't know that it's the role of this committee. And I think to answer specifically each of Dr. Delport's questions would mean that I don't know how I can answer it except Comrade Nyami to address them in a generic sense. And I'm saying that for me to respond to each of those things, it's very hard unless I have some facts. And I'm not a lawyer, and maybe the lawyers in our committee should actually deal with that.
I want to see on the Browse More report finally. I must tell you, I found Advocate Piccoli's answers to some of the questions technically very sound and compelling. Again, the playing fields are not level. One, I'm not a lawyer. Two, is unlike Advocate Piccoli, I've not applied my mind for months and months to the issue. So as a person who's an ordinary member of parliament, between Advocate Piccoli and me, the playing fields are not level. I do not have a researcher who sits with me as a lawyer and helps me. Tano does his work, but he's got 1,000 things to do. So the playing fields are not level. But these things come out, and I don't have to be a lawyer. It's simple. Where, in fact, precisely because many of his answers were good, it was glaring that on the Brown-Mole report, his answers were, in my view, inadequate. Let me explain. There's a very simple thing. One, there is no answer up to now. The March 2007 preliminary report, Chinwala notes he never got a copy. Now, when we ask him what happened to the copy, he says the copy got lost, okay? Now, the question that arises, as the chairperson rightly pointed out, if it's a copy that's lost, it was on somebody's computer, it's a hard copy of what was on a computer, why don't you just reproduce another copy or get MacArthur, whoever made that thing? That's point one. Point two, the question that Augustin must answer since I'm engaging in the way on this issue that Dr. Delport is. The second issue that wasn't comparing for me, and I want the report to address these issues. You see, we asked him, and I think the report should consider putting something in that's appropriate. Was it credible that you, given your background in the ANC, MK, and the military intelligence, you being chairperson and coordinator of the security cluster as a DG, was it credible that given the context where the whole country was paralyzed by this tussle for presidency of the ANC, was it credible that you browsed through the report, you heard McCarthy, and you filed it away? Was it credible that you could not see that the implications of this report go far beyond your legal mandate? Is it credible that you waited for another 3 months before you referred the matter to SAS and NIA? The other question that's related to that was, surely, even if you did not originally commission this report, and there's no evidence we have that he did, and nor are we suggesting that he did, by allowing another 3 months to elapse, in a way you commissioned McCarthy to finish the report. Now, unless there's a big difference between the preliminary report and the final report, it does imply, I'm not sure that the word dereliction of duty is necessarily something that I'm personally convinced about, but it does imply a remarkable lack of sensitivity to national security. But you can reply. I haven't harassed you when you spoke. And the final thing is, because stop there. All I'm simply saying is that, to be fair, the report must cover issues of process. It must raise some of these issues about the legal framework. And there are one or two things that I think we can already agree with what the opposition says. So I think you cannot ignore the fact that the law will have to deal more carefully with the questions Dr. Delport raised about the inquiry, about where the suspicion falls. I don't think the researcher should do anything but write down, maybe we can ask him to drop that section. I don't think the committee will disagree with that. We will also want to know what is the relationship between an inquiry and the ultimate decision of a president. How far can he or she go? I think there may be conventional norms that define that, but we might, in this case, in our country, want to set some parameters about being over-prescriptive. So there are those sorts of things that we have raised. For example, do we not want the new committee and the new executive to apply its mind to a role that Parliament might play, whatever that role is, in endorsing or having some say? Let the President choose, if you like, but we should have some say in the appointment or finalization of the NDPP, which will correspond then with our ultimate right to either endorse a President's decision or not. And I think a lot of useful things have been said by Dr. Delport, and I don't think we'll disagree. Certainly a report of a parliamentary committee must apply its mind to those things. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Karim. I was in service as well. One daughter of Sana. Okay. Thank you very much. Now, just thank you, Beauty. She looks smart. Yeah, Honorable Tao. No, thank you very much. I must also
just confess that way back when I was doing stand-up seven, that is great. Fun. Let me put it away. I was doing stand-up seven. My general science teacher taught me that a dream in actual fact is when the subconscious mind is active when you are asleep. So I was a bit worried earlier on to say that when we are supposed to be conscious of what we are doing, we are in actual fact subjected to dealing with issues related to the subconscious mind when we were asleep. So I was a bit worried, but thank you very much that you.
On a point of order, didn't you rule that dreams are not to be discussed?
I think that's the session now. Let's not say please. Thank you very much. Coming to the issue, I think most of the issues I really wanted to raise have been covered by the previous speakers, including the opposition as well. And I'm saying maybe one of the things that we needed to do on a lighter note to avoid this thing of the opposition and the African National Congress, probably we should have been sitting in a very interactive forum to avoid them and us. And we would have been seen as a committee of parliament and not a committee of opposition, a committee of the NEC. I was the first one. I thought you'd sit next to me. Okay. One of the things now that worries me, taking from what Comrade Jomo raised around the question of the terms of reference to Ginala and the extent to which Dr. Ginala limited herself, To me, it worried me a bit when you look at the report against the terms of reference. And in a way, it made our life very much difficult as Parliament. And I can imagine with the President, what kind of situation the President was put under, looking into the terms of reference, the extent to which they also were quite elaborate on matters that she had to look at, but only decided to focus itself on limited issues. And in a way, without, of course, trying to change our terms of reference as a committee, but my personal view is that Dr. Ginwala failed to do certain things that she was expected to do, and she did not also express herself and report or find on those things that she had to do. And as a result, she made our life very difficult. The second thing related to the Ginwala report, I don't think why should we as a committee want to believe that the inquiry as set up by law to report to the president, that the president was obliged to accept the report as is and to endorse it. Because to us, that report, it serves as a basis of informing the president. To say, having arrived at this, these are the issues that came out, and this is the information that we were able to collect. And therefore, it is up to you to decide whether if you agree or not. And it is on those bases, honorable members, that the president was not necessarily obliged to agree with the conclusion that Ginwala arrived at, but rather the president allowed his conscious mind to guide him on arriving at a logical conclusion that was also informed of the other broad terms of reference that informed the work of the commission and therefore arrived at that particular conclusion. Coming to the submissions as they were presented. I personally find the submission or the submission by Mr. Piccoli to be, he was very defensive, of course.
And of course, it's only human that you would defend your territory and you would want to protect your integrity to the extent that it allows you an opportunity to be what you want. And in that instance, I mean, if you look at Mr. Piccoli's historical evolution of his involvement as he made his presentation, MK in the department or in the administration and all that, one comes to a conclusion that in actual fact Mr. Piccoli was very responsible in doing his work as head of the NCP. One that I found very, very striking was the question of vetting, especially with regard to the decisions that were undertaken by security companies. He acknowledges, yes, that there are some operations that were undertaken by his regional division using private companies to undertake seizure operations. But he's not even aware of whether if those people that are undertaking those tasks have been vetted. He is aware that there is a problem in NIA in finalizing the vetting of these investigations and so forth. But the fact that he's not even aware of the investigators who are executing certain tasks have been vetted, but still, it doesn't say anything to him to say that there is a problem that honourable tells us. Even the chair must listen, and he must also. Yeah, but he must also. Okay, thank you very much. And linked to that, Chair, would be your issue that has got to do with the capacity of the advocate in understanding the intelligence environment and security environment in which he was operating. I found it quite surprising that he even admitted during engagement with him on Tuesday, that he's not a security expert. He's not that super knowledgeable on security matters. That came from his mouth. But the behavior, the manner in which he behaved, you would think that he's a security expert. He knew exactly what he was doing was correct. And in that way, I arrived at the conclusion that in actual fact, he put us more at a risk as a country. And that in itself, Chair, if you look at the Kinwala report, you would find that very serious information or submission that had to do with intelligence and the environment in which we could have been put under are not printed. That report does not reflect on that. So that in itself is also limits us as members of parliament to understand exactly the security threat that we found ourselves in. I mean, we don't have the benefit. While the members of the other parties are arguing that they don't have the benefit of the presence of the former Minister of Justice, we may also argue that we don't even have the benefit of the input of the DG of NIA and other intelligence institutions that made submissions to Kinwala that allowed Kinwala to also make those adverse conclusions around advocate record. And that in itself, obviously, it would have assisted us and also members to understand the security environment and not have a skewed understanding of our security environment as opposed to the broader bond structured security system then before 1994. And I think it is absolutely wrong even for us to begin to look at how our constitution looked at our security environment against what the broader bond was doing during the apartheid era.
I wasn't
I'm not sure.
I'm sure. I didn't want
that also, Chair, goes with the the extent to which the advocate gave an impression. And I mean, I found it quite interesting. The advocate gave an impression of having a very good and cordial relationship with the administrator, in this instance, the former minister of justice, Comrade Bridget Mapani, and the president. But with this thing of the request by the Malawian prosecuting authority to assist them with the investigation of plots to overthrow their parliament, is very quick to say, no, it doesn't matter that I refer to the DG, so therefore it was for the DG to inform the minister. To me, it only showed one thing, that already at that stage, it's not enough to support an adversarial relationship or environment that they were operating. It would have been something else if he had said, I had briefed the DG, and together with the DG, we then took the minister into confidence of what was happening, and therefore the administrative processes had to be activated. But the fact that even in his response, not that the letter that he wrote to the DG or that the response to this committee, the attitude that he displayed was such that it was the responsibility of head DG to inform us. It was not my responsibility. And you want to believe, you want us to believe that they had this good working relationship. And I found it quite disturbing, and I find it very difficult to believe. The question of the letter of the minister. Okay. Well, I might be limited in this instance. I might be limited, and I would quite appreciate if I can be capacitated in that to understand. I mean, if the minister, and you must look at this against the Harrens conclusion at the Constitutional Court of Appeal against the NPA and Jacob Zuma, where the Judge Harrens makes a clear conclusion that, of course, also drawing on international experiences on how the NDPP or Attorney General also relate with the ministers of justice. Comrade Yunus spoke about the issue of, in some instances, them being directly elected people and so on. But what I found quite interesting in this thing of the information, I don't find the information sought to be the kind of piece of information that says, I want to know, or give me information that will make me stop. It's not clear even in the letter. It just says she wants information. Do we have the benefit of the kind of information that is wanted? And I think because of the letter, it's not that clear. If the environment has been created, clearly the minister would have, or she might have, indicated to the advocate the kind of information that she wanted, and as we are seated here, we don't know. I don't think that we know what kind of information that the minister was looking at, because I don't see in that letter where the minister says, I want to see what the information relating to the relationship between Agliotti and Sileti. It doesn't say that. I thought that I'm protected. Yeah. So I'm raising this question of the level of information in that context. The minister did not detail the kind of information that she wanted. Agliotti's dealings and cigarettes, whatever that or scandals or syndicate that he was involved in. She didn't say that, but it was important for her to get information that will allow her to also brief the president on the kind of environment in which they were operating and what needed then to be done in order for
or had to understand and ensure that the environment is quite clean. The last one, or the several last one, relates to the report. Chair, I thought you were saying that we must deliver it. You wasted about 2 hours on perceptions and leave, you know. Chair, one critical issue that was raised by other political parties, and even advocate body also, relates to the establishment of, I can't just remember very well whether it was the Security Council or something where Security Council. And the president expects a report from the advocate, from that Security Council, which was supposed to have been chaired by Reverend Chika. Now, I found it very, very interesting that even before Reverend could in actual fact do what he was expected to do, compile or get a report and go and brief the president and the president to act in order to create an atmosphere where in which the NDPP or the DSO would have been able to execute their tasks, the president is presented with warrants of arrest. What is that? What does it say about the person who is so regarded as the most respectable person? And of course, maybe just to raise the last one, Chair, can see your heart. The infallible advocate. The infallible advocate. I'm not persuaded to agree with that notion that he is so infallible. I think he's human. He has done mistakes. And it is his responsibility also to acknowledge and accept and improve on his mistakes. And for which, in the committee, that's not what we got. We got this infallible person, and unfortunately, some other political parties also fell into that trap of, oh, wow, we've got this Messiah here. He's so infallible that anything cannot be found to have been wrong from his particular thing. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Tau. Yeah, I'm still having Honorable Compeller, Honorable Delin, Honorable Swat, Honorable Beges, Honorable Magwanish, Honorable Mdudu, and yeah. Dr. Delport and Honorable Ru didn't walk out. They asked to be excused because they're having a party caucus. So they asked us to be excused. They haven't walked out. Yeah, can we? I'm not saying this has to be brief, but I'll say, let us be questions our time, please.
Can I make a point of order, Chairperson? Really, we would like to respond to some of the issues or add some value to it or disagree, whatever. But it's difficult to respond to a speech without making specific reference to that point in the report. This is what I am disputing as a member, and then raise an opinion. But now, people talk all over the show, and you try to follow, and in the process, the point gets lost. So can I ask that when members do address that chairperson, that they go to the report or the addendum and make reference to say, this is what I want to speak to. I can't keep track of this long speech.
It's noted that I think the members no, Honorable Tau. Can I recognize the Honorable Compeller, please?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, on the first day when Advocate Ikoli answered questions of clarity to the committee, one very important thing that was done by Honorable Dili was that Reverend Chikani or somebody in the president's office should be called for clarity. I think that was a very good thing that the organization can do, which, in our view, the day that the advocate Bikoli gave evidence, first, Honorable Dilley, I had a view that the president acted outside this mandate. But the great assistance that we got from you in getting what Frank Chikan had to give to us has assisted us a lot to have a broader view on what transpired today. But, Chair, on that, the president has not, the president has brought in new things, and the president's argument on suspension or expulsion of advocate Bikoli, it is not correct, because the Reverend Chikan, Honorable, if you recall, raises part of a term of reference which all of us were not aware of, and then he raises that the other part of term of reference reads as follows. That and such other matters as may relate to the fitness and the fitness and the propriety of the national director to hold the office. And because when we were first dealing with the terms of reference on the day Advocate Bikoli gave evidence, we were limited to what was pronounced by the inquiry of Dr. Frini Dunwala on what he based his argument off. But the door was open when a question was asked by a member that why the president deviated from what he has given as terms of reference, and then Mr. Chikani in the office of the president now said, no, it is not limited because it reads as well. But I want to do what Honorable Dilley is requesting us to do. On the report on inquiry, Honorable Dilley, on page 183, Dr. Frini Dunwala asked a question on Advocate Bikoli, on whether Advocate Bikoli had taken a consideration of what the head of state had requested him to do. But this report says, because the Frini didn't hear what Advocate Bikoli said. On page 84, he says, on line 84, yes, he says, I'm saying I'm very reluctant to answer this question. But if I have to answer it, I must say that perhaps I might have defied the president, but I was just hoping that such a thing would never happen. Then the consideration goes further on the middle of the letter, where it shows that there was lack of appreciation of the time that would be taken to put up systems to respond to the request or to respond to what the president is saying as putting the rightful conditions for the arrest to be done, and also to inform, to talk to the police. And that is criminal saying that it's not me. On that page 184. And then it says also to engage with the Interpol. But finally it says, and all those other things that have been, Advocate Bikoli completely shows disrespect to the president, not as head of cabinet, but to the head of state, in considering all those other things, in my view, when the president had an intention to set up proper system for this kind of a move to be taken by Advocate Bikoli. I do not think that this, in line to the terms of reference, shows the person who's having a broader understanding of what the responsibilities are and who this person that is engaging on that time. He says, no, I'm giving you a 7 days, not 14. So that if the president could have insisted that, no, I need 14 days, then I could have defied. In fact, I could have defied him. But I do not think that was the correct way of him in taking into consideration the person who's engaging him on those matters. To me, that suggests that you're dealing with a person who completely, if he thinks that it's right, all other people are right. He's the only person who's a think tank can be right, and therefore all things should go his own way. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Robert. Can I open up the honorable direct?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to go to page 11 of the report, point number 13 and 14, where it refers to that the Jimbala Commission has found that the government has failed to prove many of these allegations and has not demonstrated that Advocate for Call is no longer a fit and proper person to hold office. But she goes on to say that I'm not, on point 14, that I'm not of the opinion that there has been an irretrievable breakdown in the relationship between the minister and Advocate Bokoli. However, the interaction has been marred by differences in understanding of their respective duties and responsibilities of each office with regard to the prosecuting authorities. But then she offers a remedy. She says, these differences can be overcome through collegial discussions and establishment of formal channels of communication on operational and policy matters. On that point, I think that, and I want to understand whether we all agree, that we are not debating whether Advocate Yusuf Pakoli was a fit and proper person. The inquiry found that he was, and the president agreed. So at least there's agreement on that point. What I want to raise a further, Chairperson, if you look through the report, it says, I can't find anywhere in the report where it refers to a breach of national security. It only says that Advocate Pakoli did not consider national security. And if there's any breach that could be referred to, how was it remedied? Because nowhere in this report is there any breach of national security. Because if it was a breach, I would have then said, what did the president do to rectify that breach? There's nothing in the report about it. So I think that we are only speculating that if he had not granted the president extra time, that there would have been a threat to national security. And again, national security is defined in the Constitution. And when you look at how it's defined in the Constitution, I certainly cannot find any clause there that could have possibly been breached. But now, that's what we have to consider. He has not breached anything, but he has not considered national security. Look, at the end of it, Chairperson, I think that we need to come to a conclusion in the end after all our deliberations to give Advocate Pakoli another chance. Since Dr. Zinwala is suggesting how these differences could be sorted out, let us put him back and let him finish his term of 10 years and everybody will be happily lived thereafter. Just if I can respond to Honorable Compella's point on page 184, the question that you referred to, Comrade, Dr. Zinwala said, Advocate Pakoli was asked a hypothetical question, and he answered to a hypothetical question put to him. That's why he says that I am saying I'm very reluctant to answer this question, but if I have to answer it, I must say that perhaps I might have defied the president. But I was just hoping that such a thing would never happen. it's a hypothetical question. But advocates could call
it. Sorry, Committee Chair, I just want to check on the page that is ready.
184.
184 and 183.
That's right.
I want to check the line that speaks of a hypothetical.
294. Paragraph 294. Advocate Pokoli did respond. He said that national security should not be used to avoid or to stop a criminal investigation. Now, that is really so, because let's come back to the principle again. That just because it's the National Police Commissioner, you know, the principle that we are all equal before the law, then why should he get special treatment just because he's the National Police Commissioner? Why, if other common criminals and every one of us are tied there, position will not be considered? In fact, the Constitution does not qualify all equal before the law except a National Police Commissioner or a president. Not even the president is excluded from there. We're all equal before the law. And therefore, the National Police Commissioner should not have expected different treatment from the National Prosecuting Authority. The last point that I want to raise, Chairperson, is I've also not heard any further questioning on a very serious allegation made by Advocate Pokoli. He says that after he was suspended, Advocate Mshe went to a sitting judge demanding that warrants of arrest must be withdrawn. Now, that is interference of the NPA with the judiciary. We should really take that further, and Advocate Mshe needs to answer, why did he interfere with the independence of the judiciary? For a national director to go to a sitting judge and say withdraw the warrant, that is also wrong. And I think that's one issue that we have to look at and get some answers. On Honourable Karim's question about our different interpretation of the separation of powers, again, I will keep to my point that we've seen in the past 14 years in our new democracy, we have seen several times where there was a conflation of parliament and the executive along party political lines. In fact, in Honourable Karim's own submission, he said, we were busy consulting with the executive. And so there is the separation of powers that I think that we, and here's an opportunity with this report now, where Parliament can actually show that we are not lapdogs of the executive, that in fact we can come to a difference. Because I think this Janwala report is strengthening the hand of Parliament to come to a different view than the president. And really, I'm still hoping that we will get to that point one day where we will have a Parliament that will hold the executive to account, that will play its oversight role without looking at party political instructions or lines, but it seems to me that we're so far away from it. Because then a lot of reference was made to the opposition politicians. Yes, then I would really like to be relieved to go out and get some more votes or take some more votes away from the ANC than sit here knowing that what the outcome is going to be. Then at least we can play a more active role in promoting and deepening and strengthening our democracy. I've just come from the Northern Cape, and I've taken a lot of the votes there. And I want... So really, Chairperson, I was just saying that on a lighter note. It is clear that we are not really confining ourselves to the report here in front of us, but we are going broader with our own. You know, I also don't want to be a pseudo lawyer, Honourable Karim. Pseudo lawyers is now emerging here, whereby we put our own interpretation of the Act and the Constitution, and we put our own opinion. When we started, the both chairpersons informed us that we are not going to start the inquiry all over again. We're not going to reinvent the wheel and open up. We are doing exactly that. We are doing exactly that. That's my earlier suggestion. Let us go back to the point in the report, and that will assist us to even go quicker. Because if we go page by page, Chairperson, I have marked all my reports and addendums. I will just put up my hand where I see clarity. I want to make an appointment, a point there. Like I said, now on page 14, I've got another few pages here, 188. I've actually read the document. It will take us a day, and we will go through this report like we are requested to do at Parliament, and then come to a decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Julian there. The first Honourable Compeller. You are assisting us here, we're getting somewhere. I hope it won't ruffle feathers.
No,
no. Okay.
Myself and Honorable Delhi on this. But I want Honorable Delhi to move a little bit further. You must go to page 183 on paragraph 301. Then it will clearly give you the character of the person that you're talking about. I don't want to go back because you and I read it in as far as it suits us. Now I say let us go beyond that and then you. Thank you,
Chair. Okay, as I said, it's getting us somewhere. Thanks very much, Chair. Yeah, I think I can lobby such that we agree, call it compare and call it delete. If you go up and come up there. When they come here, they'll they'll assist us. Yeah, can I recognize the Honorable Swart?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also just want to respond very briefly to some of the issues, and I do want to just support Mr. Karim in those broader issues. I think they are very correct. Maybe I didn't place enough emphasis on that. And at some stage, we're going to have to deliberate on what is a fit and proper person, what is the relationship between the minister and the NDPP. And I just want to alert us to the fact that we follow the Namibian model in that regard that is referred to in the papers. When we look at the Constitution and Harun's that judgment. But just to deal with what to me seems to be the absolute centrality of this issue relates to the request for 7 or 14 days. It seems to be, as you crystallize in the deliberation, the Brasmore is important, but there were, in our view, certain explanations that were given. But at the end of the day, it comes down to that point. And if I may address you very briefly on that, my concern is, and I fully accept the credibility of both Reverend Shikani and Advocate Piccoli, but particularly remember Advocate Piccoli was found to be of an unimpeachable character. So we can't come here and question his, whether he lied or not. He's been found to be a valid and a credible witness. But when it comes to that exact happened, Mr. Karim made certain comments that the President might have made, that I need more time for do this, but according to papers, we still don't know what the President, if you read the submission to the President 2011, there it is, from Advocate Piccoli, it says, the President did not motivate his request for 2 weeks in any way. We still do not know what his motivation was. Now, his version was accepted by Ginwala, and although an adverse finding was made on that regard, we can't say the President said, we are in a national crisis. His version is, and we tend to agree, and it was found to be credible, no motivation was given. When Mr. Piccoli suggested 1 week instead, the President did not engage with him on the adequacy of his suggestion. He did not say a week would not be enough. The impression he created was that he would have preferred 2 weeks, but that a week would do. This is crucial.
Absolutely.
It is crucial to the whole deliberations around this, because we're making certain wild allegations that national security was in breach and the President had certain things, but he should have said it then. There is no reason to believe that the President was overly concerned about the matter. That was what Mr. Piccoli went out of the meeting with. Then we get to the letter that was raised. It was never mentioned in the letter the very next day. It was never mentioned, and I'm reading from paragraph 47 of the submissions to the President. It is crucial.
So there seems to, maybe they missed one another, but we need to, and that's why I engaged with Reverend Shekana, as to what exactly happened at that meeting. And he did give us a bit more information. But the point is, it was never a grant of the inquiry. Can it be, in the light of that, if one considers that the minister was briefed 13 times, the president 10 times, that he was briefed on May 2007, that this whole investigation will go towards a warrant? And that is why I said it's difficult to believe that there was this huge concern. But even if there was from the president, and we fully accept the man of the cloth, Reverend Shekani, who said there was that concern, surely it should have been expressed. We were all summoned as opposition parties to Reverend Shekani at Parliament. You would have gone. The reason that was given was a breakdown in relations. There was no issue relating to national security. The point was made by a colleague about it as a loophole in the terms of reference, and that and such other matters as relate to national security was in the terms of reference. But it was never argued. The government, it was never part of the government's papers. And Gilwala says, had this been argued, had it been before me, it might well have been a reason. But she says it was never argued before me. Now we are then taking it out, and Mr. Karim's point is correct. Can we now take that out of that frame of reference? It was not argued. If we look at the statements, the public statements, the signing affidavits. Now, we don't have the signing affidavits before us. We've only got the findings. The signing affidavits were never mentioned. It was never mentioned in the public statement, that particular issue of the 7 and the 14 days. It was not even in the affidavits of reply. It was not mentioned in the government heads of argument. The DG, according to, filed two affidavits. He filed two affidavits, Reverend Shekani. And I think it's unclear, I maybe should have asked him. But why didn't he raise it in his affidavit? According to these heads of argument, it was never raised. It was only raised for the first time when the Reverend Shekani gave oral evidence as to saying it was a concern. And that is what, in our view, an afterthought that has come up. The main reason was the breakdown in relations. And if you take it up, and sorry I'm taking a bit of time, I'm sticking to the documents here. But if you take the sequence of events, if you take the meeting that Advocate Piccoli had when he had difficulties with the SAPS to obtain documents, he met with Commissioner Salevi, and how difficult must that have been? It's on the paper, to meet with the person you're investigating. And it's on the papers where the Commissioner said, you will not get that information. Does that not then constrain you to get a warrant? So, Chairperson, I'm just, also as a last point, the point that I made is that I have worked with Advocate Piccoli for 10 years in the Justice Committee. There were never issues or considerations about him being a threat to national security. There is a statement, I couldn't find it here, where he does admit that he's not an infallible person. That he does make mistakes, there is a statement there. And maybe he should have been more concessive when the President asked him for submission. But does that mean that he is unable to hold office in an environment where he's experienced, where we've got a huge crime level in South Africa, where we need a prosecutor, he's got impeccable struggle credentials, where we need someone to head up the prosecutor authority? And I earnestly ask us to consider those aspects when we deliberate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Paul. In terms of the parliamentary program, the NA is supposed to be having a plenary this afternoon.
Yes.
If it's true, we have to take note of that. And the co-chair is requesting to address the committee, or to address the committee, but after all the speakers have commented, I think I will allow that space. The next speaker on the line. Yes,
person, in view of the sitting, I have some important work. Can you kindly excuse me?
Can we disagree on? Can I just before he goes, it's important. IFP is not here. That's correct. If you go, you see. Can I just do something quickly procedurally? There is already emerging the contours of a report, the things we can agree on. One,
if we can brief the researchers, there's two of them here, and there's a lawyer, Vanaran, that the first section just be with the terms of reference, what it is that Parliament required us to do. The second section sets out the composition of the committee and so on, the normal things of the report. The third section, or section three... Before he goes, if you agree on that, then at least we've achieved a concrete result with all the parties here about process. That's all I'm pleased for.
Yeah, I don't know, because the court just didn't brief me. Maybe he wants to come to that kind of... I don't know, but... Just also the committee, the committee. But I am having Honourable Burgess, Honourable Magwanishi, Honourable Ntuli, and Honourable Karen Steele. I wonder if you want to address the committee before Honourable Fernanda leaves.
I'm whipping. I've got important parliamentary duties.
Basically, give me only 4 minutes, Honourable Professor. Let's the culture address us, only 4 minutes. Okay. Yeah, Colinda, you are the chairperson. Can you address the committee before he leaves?
I'll start by saying that I'll avoid participating as much as possible. But as a chairperson, you need to give direction. One, two questions must be asked by a co-chairperson. So that's what I'm trying to do. I think the deliberations from everyone in the morning were helpful. I can call them brainstorming. Whatever way we started, whether sound or unsound, but it ended up becoming a sound process, sound and sober. So I'm sure that these deliberations will guide us on actual focusing. So I think Honorable Dilil did say that we should focus on the report. So we did do that. So the best thing is to come up with a way in which we write the report. So as when we agree in principle, then we can make suggestions that we can either suspend this session up until a further date, because I don't think it's going to be possible for a report to be written tomorrow, and we go out to a meeting tomorrow. So that's the first matter we should resolve here. As to the date, members will be helpful in saying beyond today, where to. So as when we are satisfied that the parliamentary committee support staff has actually, you know, the researchers and I guess applied themselves to the writing of the report, then we come back with the report, and from there we deliberate. So in that way, I don't want us to proceed further and create more controversy around the issue. So I just want to give an opportunity for us to say, what are your diaries like?
Wasn't that what Dr. Delport also had in mind?
Maybe. Hey, like, of course, Dr. Delport, you want to join the DA? Yeah.
Too old. Too old. Fine. Okay. That's a proposal on the table. That one. A Sharon thought is that that will enable members to consult their principals. But when you come back on the date that we're going to agree on, at least with a mandate from our principals. So the chairperson proposed that can't we just just adjourn or defer deliberations until another date. That would be a very long.
When must it be finished, by the way? When must it be finalized?
Yeah, maybe let's propose this because we...
I'm not sure when we've got it
finalized.
Are we supposed to debate it on Friday, this Friday, or
that's what initially, but based on what's happening now, it's not possible. I think we'll have to shift the date for further date. Can you come with some concrete proposal, Honourable Chief Whip? I think will assist us. Deputy Chief Whip will assist us.
Chairperson, I think to be fair to the researchers, it will not be possible to do all these things. And then thereafter, I think Honourable Watchman and Merzo would agree with me that after that there will be this issue to prepare for the state of the nation address, which will be difficult for any committee to meet. And we have people who are the Honorable Patricia, the leader of the party, the Labour Party involved in the preparation of the state of the nation. I think we should meet after that, which will be around on the 11th. On the 10th,
to proceed. When the president replies, that's normally a short one. I think he's replying on Tuesday.
Yes.
Tuesday, there's no... Yes. On the 10th. He will reply not even an hour. We can meet again on the 10th at 3 o'clock. There's a gap.
Yeah, there's a proposal of some days after the state of the nation address. Honorable Compeller, Honorable Tudor, Honorable. But not only days, please. Can I assist us, Honorable?
Are we within the 30 days, so the NPA Act says 30 days. We're still within that.
Check. In the light of that day, I know Mrs. Fanamerda will be flying from KwaZulu-Natal and come here. So I propose the 11th so that we must not have many things in our hands. The 11th is correct. And
it is in view, Honorable Ntuli?
No, it's not just different view. I was going to second the 11th.
Comrade?
So that's the budget day.
It is a process, but not
a budget day.
Yeah, firstly, the 11th is actually budget day, and we've been told we can't have our public hearings on constitutional amendments on the bill relating to the Kutsong matter. But I want to do a related matter to process so we're clear what we're doing, not the issue of the date. Can we just say something about that? Process only.
Let us on the date. Let us agree with that. Do we agree?
I went
to
Okay.
No, I are you persuaded?
Not persuaded.
No, I think Comrade Pence, you managed to persuade Honorable Compeller. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah, I think we agree on the 10th instead of the 11th. The 10th. No, the 11th is 10th. Yeah, we're sticking to the 10th, So are we saying 10th, Okay. We're saying the 10th, yes. No, we're agreeing on the 10th. Thank you very much. The 10th, on record, we're meeting this committee. But the committee unit was assisting us on the process. But if there are members who want to assist our staff in making sure that our report become even more richer, please, by all means, assist us in the best interest of all of us. But committee unit, want to say something?
Very quickly. You see, we must also recognize the value of what we've done. And the researchers must be mandated, you know. The contours of the report are there. I've said the first three sections. The fourth section deals with what Advocate Piccoli said in a summary of about a page. And then equally, the same amount of time is given or space to the two representatives of the executive. Then what we do is we summarize what the different views have been here in a nutshell. And I'm suggesting the next section deals with what I think we'll agree on, about six or seven issues based on what Dr. Delport and others said, including us on our side, on the legal framework needs to be clear. And then the last section of our finding. Now, I think because we covered so many bills, what we might want to do, the two chairs, we should give the researchers a deadline. That first draft of the report should be available at least seven days before we meet, so the 3rd of February, if I'm correct. The first draft should be given to the two chairs. You look at it and so on. And I think we should distribute the draft
to the opposition members so that you might even want to consider a process of a small multi-party subcommittee, ensuring that what you have said is accurately represented, what you have said, and so on. So that when we come here, not all of us sit here and go through every line. But the process has to be open. That report is merely a draft. So in other words, draft one is given by the researchers to the chairperson. Draft two, think about it, one person or so, two from each party, process draft two. It is draft two that's brought here. That's just a proposal, if it's agreeable to everybody, that might facilitate things. But no final decisions are made except in this committee.
Thank you very much. We've done those logistics. I think we can go back to the deliberations now. Having noted that those are proposals, that's definitely that is taking us somewhere. But please know that we agree that if there's any member who wants to assist in putting some more flesh on this thing, by all means, please do it. I'm still having this honorable basis. I thought that that would be it. I don't want to be special because I recognize them. It must come from them, please. If you want to say, colleagues, let's be honest with the
conversation. Chairperson, I had 10 pages, but for the sake of progress, I'm going to reduce it to half a page. I'm going to be as fast as I can. Chairperson, if the President agreed with the findings of Ginwala, particularly the first finding that Cornish Mary reinstated or restored to his position, we wouldn't be here today. Because he would merely be concurring with what Ginwala found. The question I think that we need to decide is now, was the President obliged or compelled to follow the recommendations of the Ginwala Commission? Was he obliged? Should he have? And if we find that he was not obliged, then that really is the work that we're supposed to be doing. And let me say it, Chair, that is not a factual question whether he was obliged, it's a question in law. It's a legal question whether he was obliged to follow the recommendations that was put before him. It's a question of law there. And I think that's really what we're sitting with here now. Now, it did go beyond what the recommendations were. And I say with respect that there's nothing wrong with that, but we let the other legal people put the input in that and see whether I'm in fact correct. There's nothing wrong with that. It happens all the time. She was asked, the commission was asked to make recommendations, findings and recommendations. The ultimate power did not lie with her. If it did lie with her, the president didn't have a say in the matter at all. She could merely have put the report in and said the man must be restored. But that's not the legal position. That's the one point, Chair. The other point is the Brasmold report. I raised this issue about why Piccoli, Piccoli and Advocate McCarthy were consulting one another. Why did McCarthy go to Piccoli with a preliminary report in March 2006? See, his boss. The man is ultimately responsible. If he wasn't responsible, I don't think he would have reported to Piccoli. That's why he went there. That's the man that must take, if there's anything, if anybody's going to fall, because the carpet gets pulled or because the ground is unsound, he's the national director. Forget McCarthy's role in this whole episode. McCarthy consulted his boss. His boss got a preliminary report. Now, Chairperson, I think if we talk about the Brasmold report, properly named the Brasmold Consolidated Report, we must understand what we're talking about, Chairperson. Because I think a lot of us are talking about this document. It's a common cause. It is a product of the DSO. The architect of this document is the DSO. And we need to understand what this document is saying. Because you might have this false impression that these are verses from the Bible, that it contains some very interesting reading material. Chairperson, this is a document, it is the mother of all evil documents. If you read this document, A reasonable person cannot come to any other conclusion that this is a document that is created with all evil intent. Read the document. I'm not exaggerating. We had members on the JSCI from the opposition. And if you look at the report of the JSCI, you will see the conclusions that we come to. There was no opposition to that report of the JSCI. Because even those opposition members from the IFP and the DA could come to no other conclusion that that document, the Brown-Mould Consolidated Report, is an evil document. It is the mother of all evil documents, Chairperson. And I think we must not dodge around this thing. Now, I come to the issue I really want to raise on this document. The evidence and the explanations on that the advocate gives on how this document was dealt with, and that. But with all due respect, Chairperson, my colleague here, the Honorable Karim, said it was weak, it was unconvincing, it is not probable. You've got a top secret document that leaks into the media and the public. It doesn't matter. We find out now that the first report is missing. The preliminary report is also missing. These things don't happen in the intelligence community, Chairperson. You can't have top secret documents disappearing and there's no explanations. Even the commissioner, even Dr. Freeley-Tumwana found that very strange, that when she called for the report, it was suddenly missing. What is it in that report that we were not supposed to see or that the commission was not supposed to see? These things are all unconvincing, Chairperson. You can't come and tell an ad hoc committee of parliament that you disagree with the task team's findings. You disagree with the findings of the JSCI. That report of the JSCI has been adopted by parliament. It is the work of parliament now. It's not the work of the JSCI. So, Chairperson, I want us to give some more consideration to this Brown-Mould report and not deal with it as if it is a document that has got some verses of the Bible in it, that there's this possibility that it's got some good things in it. If you look at what the JSCI found and what the intention of this document was, then, Chairperson, then you will understand when Advocate Piccoli gets this thing in his hand, he should have had a heart attack. He should have collapsed the first time he saw that March report. If he is, we say he is. But now he says he was advised by the director of DSO that I'm giving you another report, so he didn't apply his mind. Working progress. You didn't apply your mind to something as easy. Chairperson, I think those are my submissions. I ask merely that we don't overlook this document and the whole episode around this Brown-Mould report as if it is something that was by the way. This point on its own is an issue that the advocate cannot bypass. On this point alone, he must fail. Thank you, Chairperson.
Umkhabro number one, no. Oh, no, Umkhabro. Okay. Honorable Magbalis.
I'm not sure whether I must continue after Mr. Bedard has spoken. But I'm largely covered by my previous comrades who have spoken on this matter. But I think I would like to draw the attention of the House of Section 1268 of the NPA. That section does not prescribe the president to exclusively rely on the recommendations of the inquiry. I think that you must bear in mind. What the NPA Act instructs the president to do, or enjoins the president to do, is to apply his mind. And the reasons given and the letter written to Parliament is so that the president has applied his mind. We must check, we must look at that seriously. But the Tinwala report is not the only report, or it's not the only information the president has taken to consideration. I think that's point number one. The president has raised the issue of the national security as one of the issues that has made him to arrive at the decision. Let's look at that issue.
what does our constitution say about national security? The principle of government as the truth of the Republic I follow. In terms of section 198A of the constitution, national security must reflect the resolve of South Africans as individuals and as a nation to live as equals, to live in peace and harmony, to be free from fear and want to seek a better life. Also, if you read section 198B, to resolve to live in peace and harmony precludes any South African citizen from participating in an armed conflict, nationally or internationally, except as provided for in terms of the constitution or national legislation. Also, if you read section 198C, national security must pursue in accordance with the law, including international law. Section 198D, national security is subject to the authority of parliament and the national executive. Still on national security, if you read the case of Bilima Sethla versus the President of the Republic, it states that a collective pursuit of national security is an integral to the primary constitutional object of the established constitutional state based on democratic values, social justice, and fundamental human rights. That was what made the president to take the issue of national security very seriously.
Can we get the reasons of that loss? Let's take your
state versus Bilima Sethla. Also, if you look at, because there seems to be a suggestion that separation of powers only means that parliament must have an adversarial relationship with the executive, which is wrong. If I may read section 44 of the constitution, section 41 of the constitution, that our spheres of government and all organs of state within this sphere must, among others, cooperate with one another in a mutual trust and good faith. So we will not disagree with the executive for the sake of disagreement. We will not agree with the executive for the sake of agreeing. Ours is a constructive engagement to promote section 41 of the constitution. I think also that should. If you read the definition and the principles of national security, then you come to page 14 of the summary of the report as correctly argued by Mr. Swart. Dr. Finwala says, had this been presented as a reason for the suspension, when his conduct would have been a real risk of undermining national security, I would not have hesitated to find the reason for debilitating it. There is a reason on national security. There are reasons on national security. I think also Mr. Bedas has also argued the point very well of national security. Even if that was not argued before the commission, but the president cannot only take what is in the commission, but the issue of national security has been established that there was a disregard or the lack of sensitivity on national security. Therefore, the president applying in his mind on national security found the advocate because he knows to be fit and proper. I don't think that the president is not within his legal right to do that. Also, the other issue that we must also is that the commission was not about only about the reasons submitted. It was also about the tender process, which Honorable Nyambi has read all of them to all of us. The terms of reference are very clear. This is any other matter that 2.1.1, that any other matter that the commission might be engaged in terms of the society of advocacy going to hold for. So if you take all those matters into consideration, I think the information before us and the submission before us, I'm not talking on behalf of other members, but what I've seen and what I've heard, that the information before us clearly proves that there was a deviation of duty. Advocate Tico did not apply his mind in the fact that Grausmann reported concern. Therefore, it is against the constitutional principles of our constitution. Therefore, I would propose that we agree with the present practices and to remove as a
Then the last one will be Honorable Karim, then I'll allow my co-chair to have a last word to adjourn the meeting. And while everybody is still here, you are all invited by the two co-chairs to go and enjoy our juicy, delicious, sumptuous meal at the old assembly restaurant. Thank you very much. Honorable Ntuli.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will say the two previous speakers in front of me, I mean, they've covered, I think they've covered a lot. Just to say that I think we have to appreciate that the president is not just the only the president of the executive. He is also the state president, which is the commander-in-chief of the security, of the state security forces of South Africa. Then we have to take from that context when he is making these decisions, and then when it is looking at broader issues of the state security, not to confine it where we say no, as if we are just talking about the executive and parliament, that he is also the state president, who's the commander in chief. I just wanted to highlight that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Karen.
I mean, I'm really bemused that Patricia could say that I said we must consult with the executive. I'm not sure in what context, but certainly I'm very clear. The basic thrust of my argument was that whatever our outcome, we must not sacrifice our integrity as a parliamentary committee to be rigorous over the executive, so I'm not sure what context, but certainly my record as a chair will speak for itself for the committees that I've served. Secondly, I don't agree with her at all. And we can note that the ID doesn't agree with us, that's fine. But we cannot look at the matter of advocacy security, though that's the core issue, correctly so, without looking at the legal framework. And what we have agreed on as a majority, we can note the ID is not happy about it, that's what they say. But let the report first appear before Patricia decides what she thinks. That actually we do think it's very important to explore the possibilities in the new five-year term for greater legal certainty. It is my view, for what it's worth, that if we had a better set of legislation, including the Constitution, we would actually be better able to manage our own role in this regard. In other words, the point that this will make, the earlier point, one of the problems we have is that the legislation, my view, anyway, should be considered for greater clarity so that Parliament is better able to play its role. Thank you.
Can I now allow the co-chair to address us in closing? Co-chair.
The issue of the report, there's a suggestion that has been made by committee that you receive a draft, and then what you bring to the committee would then be second draft.
Now, just to facilitate, it's not a controversial, it's not a time yet.
No, I agree with that, but I just thought maybe, would it be to the benefit of committee members also to have that second draft?
No, everybody gets it. No.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Coach, and members. The last thing I want to make is that I observed that you see, there is a distinction between sensitivity, you know, of legal security, and at the same time giving the National Commissioner of Police special treatment. So I don't want to bring the distinctions, because when you look into the Constitution, that all are equal before the law, etc. We are guaranteed equal as individuals of our rights in the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. But when you look into the magnitude of the position one person in society occupied. Either the president, the minister, member of parliament, you can make a differentiation. There is no way in which, in terms of practice, you keep on saying equality and equality. Obviously, if the police have something, they suspect you, and you go into parliament, the police have no right to follow you into parliament, a member of parliament, Patricia Deligne. So I'm just saying, we want the president, as a commander-in-chief, to exert himself on national security as a commander-in-chief and to express the necessary sensitivities. So any other issue which states that we are all equal before the law, for me, is hypothetical. So I just want us to say, when we come back...
Chairperson, a point of order. You entered the debate again. Will you allow me also to respond? Because this is a matter of interpretation. And I said earlier on, it has nothing to do with lawyers. I still maintain my point.
Giving you a different point of view, because I allowed you an opportunity of raising an issue. So, and we have not even resolved the issue that a chairperson cannot raise a view. So I'm just saying to everybody, we must be mindful of balancing arguments when we argue. So as the interpretation is not necessarily the same. So I was just giving the differentiation. But I just want to say, members, I think, including Member Patricia, Deligne, Coach Father Melvin, Mr. Swartz, everybody, Honorable Van Yorten, members of the ANC, everybody, I think you behaved extremely well in making sure that you make our work easier, because when we started, we were confused by a lot of things, by strings and perceptions. And now we are now clear that these are the issues we are able to reveal, explain, elucidate, and more or less there are certain things where we agree and there are certain things where we disagree. But I'm sure that the report will reflect on the views up until we come up with findings, which will be presented to Parliament as recommendations. Without much ado, I want to thank you one and all.